Angeles has called me to serve at an inflection point in our history. Just think, a pandemic, a rapidly changing economy, a rapidly changing climate, the cost of living, and in Los Angeles, 40,000 people sleeping on the street every day.
That's Karen Bass today, keeping a campaign promise to declare a state of emergency on homelessness a day after she was sworn in as LA's first female mayor. Vice President Kamala Harris flew in to do the honors.
I, Karen Ruth Bass, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the State of California.
The Constitution of the State of California.
And the Charter of the City of Los Angeles.
And the Charter of the City of Los Angeles.
At yesterday's ceremony, LA native and former National Youth Poet Laureate Amanda Gorman read an original poem, and Stevie Wonder gave a surprise performance. Joining us now to talk about the inauguration and what's ahead for Mayor Bass is Dakota Smith. She covers the mayor's office and City Hall for the LA Times. Hi there.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about the inauguration itself. This was obviously a historic moment. LA's first woman mayor, second black mayor, sworn in by the first female and first black vice president. So talk about the significance and what it was like watching this happen yesterday.
Well, there was a tremendous amount of energy in the room. It felt like a celebration of women, of breaking glass ceilings. It felt like a celebration of blackness. It felt very exciting, and there was a lot of optimism in the room. As you said, Stevie Wonder performed, and as did a number of other black artists and poets. So it felt very exciting. And I think having it in this Microsoft Theater gave it a feeling of intimacy, maybe more so. Originally, it was planned to be held at City Hall outside. This felt more like a production, you know, mm-hmm. So it felt very exciting to be in that room.
Yeah, well, it was raining, which is also a celebrated event here in
Los
Angeles.
It was raining. Although by the time that she actually got kicked off, it was actually sunny outside. But either way, it was fun to be in the room with everyone.
Okay, well, not to belabor the metaphor, but there are a lot of rain clouds on her horizon. So she has a lot on her plate, and she declared a state of emergency for homelessness today. What does that mean, and what does that free her up to do?
Well, throughout her campaign, she talked a lot about bringing urgency to the issue. That is not a word that we heard Garcetti speak a lot of. He did a lot on homelessness, but he didn't use the word urgency a lot. And she did. And this morning, as you said, she declared a state of emergency, and she was joined by several other politicians, city and county politicians, to say basically we're gonna get things moving on this and quickly. And so I think she's giving hope to people that she will actually do something different. We'll see what that actually means. What she is doing is declaring a state of emergency that allows her to spend money easier and faster, and also cut through some red tape. But mm-hmm. what she actually does sort of remains to be seen, and we're still sort of working through the details to find out what she'll be doing. But it does, for instance, give her the ability to quickly hire providers who can go out on the street and talk to homeless people and try to get them indoors. It also gives her the ability to commandeer property, for instance, but she has signaled that she probably won't do that because she thinks that that will result in lawsuits that will slow down the process of housing people.
Right. And I heard her urge Angelenos to be more open to allowing shelters in their neighborhoods. But, you know, as we have reported, you've reported, we've all reported that that is one of the major problems, is that neighborhoods and activists and residents just don't want these facilities in their neighborhoods. And that's a huge problem. How is she going to get around that?
Well, with this emergency declaration, she could more easily open up those sorts of shelters and housing sites in council districts. So it'll be interesting to see if council members you know, sign on to her plan. We've been asking the council members today if they will. And so far, most of them have said yes, that we've talked to. Mm-hmm. But you're right, considering the NIMBYism that has we've seen in some areas of the city, it'll be interesting to see how the council members who, you know, obviously face re-election from these constituents, must face re-election, how mm-hmm. they'll react.
Right. And so what did she talk about in terms of affordable housing and perhaps keeping rents down? Does she have a plan for that?
She hasn't specifically talked about rents or housing. She has talked about leasing buildings like hotels, like we saw during COVID, and extend, and maybe hotel conversions as well, turning that into housing. So those are the things she's talked about so far that we know about. And we know that she also wants to clear large encampments as well, yeah, which is something that we'll see right away.
I see. And where would those people go?
We know that she is asking city agencies for, you know, lists of where the biggest encampments are. I think, again, she's going to be trying to get those people into hotels and perhaps motels as well.
Mm. Okay, so she has got a lot of work to do. Of course, former mayor at this point, Eric Garcetti, also wanted to attack homelessness and was unable to do so. Looking back at his tenure, if you would, he's the longest serving mayor since Tom Bradley. During his time, there were some new sports stadiums approved, a new light rail system. There was also, unfortunately, a sexual misconduct scandal that's left a cloud over his administration and has prevented him from being appointed as U.S. ambassador to India for the moment. So what is it that Garcetti will most be remembered for, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. I think he can claim credibly that he really led on some environmental initiatives, trying to get the DWP to, for instance, begin recycling water, at the same time asking Angelinos to conserve water. He really pushed for those environmental goalposts, and obviously Mayor Villaraigosa also did too, leading the city to get off of coal. But Garcetti continued in that vein. And I think also on transit, he helped pass Measure M, which obviously will build out rail lines and transit projects throughout the city and for years to come. And I also think that he, during COVID, was really a reassuring presence to many Angelinos. Mm-hmm. He not only was giving nightly addresses and helping people emotionally cope, but he set up vaccine sites and testing sites, obviously at Dodger Stadium and elsewhere, and really jumped into action. So I think those three things, first off, is what he will be remembered for. Also, the Olympics, I should add. We'll see how those play out. Obviously, there's a little more wariness, I think, in some parts of the world about the Olympics. But we'll see by 2028 how people feel about it and how it actually comes together.
And do we know what he is planning to do? Should he not become the next ambassador to India?
You know, I think he is really hoping that happens. I saw he gave an interview where he was asked if he would run for Feinstein's Senate seat, and he said no. He said, I'm planning to be in India then when that election is happening. So I think he's very focused on this. He's also suggested that, like, he's looking forward to being a private citizen. So, you know, maybe he would become a professor or join a think tank. I'm not sure. We know he loves to travel. So I would imagine in the short term, he's going to be doing some traveling if he doesn't immediately go to India.
All right. Dakota Smith covers the mayor's office and City Hall for the Los Angeles Times. Dakota, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. It is a new beginning for the city of Los Angeles. It's also a new week, and it is another reminder that this is the end of the year and your chance to begin anew by being a member of KCRW. See how I wrapped all that into one tortured sentence? I'm joined by KCRW President Jennifer Farrow. Hi, Jennifer. Happy Monday.
Thank you. I'm in your studio, and you are not, and it is freezing in here.
Is it? It always is. It always is. That's why I have that moldy old sweater in there.
I see it. And I get why you're just so on point when you're here doing the show, because you're just like, you know, moving quickly because you're freezing. Anyway, but that was a brilliant way to wrap all of this together and remind people that we are in our a season of giving back drive. We are asking people to support KCRW. At the end of the year, it's the time when we really think about all the things that we value and that we care about. And we buy gifts for people, and we give people our attention and our time. And we hope that you will give a gift to KCRW right now at kcrw.com/give.
Right. And so KCRW, we just came out of Morning Becomes Eclectic. So we came out of 3 hours of incredible music that we play for you every day in the morning between Morning Edition and this show, Press Play. And then we delve back into the news to get you caught up with what's happening, because we believe that you are a complicated, complex, and interesting person who can like lots of things. You can like music. You can also like news and public affairs and the arts. And that's why KCRW provides all of that to you. You don't have to go elsewhere to find out who the latest hot band is. You don't have to go elsewhere to find out what's on Karen Bass's plate and what it's going to be like for her in the next, the next 4 years are going to be daunting for her as she tries to tackle and handle and really work on the homelessness problem here in Los Angeles. So we have all of that for you because we believe in connecting you to your world, be it the arts or be it news. And it's not free. It costs money to do that. So we would like you to return the favor by going online at kcrw.com/give. There are lots of good reasons, right, Jennifer, to give back, and lots of good little presents we have.
Yeah.
For you.
And well, one thing is you're making an investment in a fantastic community that feeds your curiosity. And I have to say, I am here for the Legal Eagle, who's coming up, I think, next, right?
Yes,
I'm going to stick around.
She is. Every Monday she's here.
Yes. And just this show, I think, is a perfect representation of KCRW and your interest as well. So kcrw.com/give.
Do it now, because this is the last few days of our end of the year fundraiser. You can get a generous tax deduction, I believe. This is just the time to do it, and it will make you feel really great to end the year giving back. KCRW.com/give. Lots of great thank you gifts there. Also some great sweepstakes, which we'll talk about in the next break. But right now you can go online and check it all out at KCRW.com/give. As Jennifer mentioned, our Legal Eagle will be here to talk about same-sex marriage and the new law that President Biden is expected to sign, and whether a carve-out for religious institutions is actually legal. She'll talk about that and Donald Trump's latest legal problems. That is coming up next on Press Play.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Next week, the January 6th committee will release its final report on the Capitol insurrection, which may include criminal referrals of anyone involved, including Donald Trump. Aside from that possibility, the former president continues to face other legal problems. Earlier today, a federal judge ended the special master's review of those sensitive materials the FBI seized at Mar-a-Lago. It's Monday. So you know what that means. Our Legal Eagle is here, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Hello.
Hello.
All right, let's go back in time to another time, another era, last August. And that's when the FBI seized those boxes of classified materials at Trump's residence. And then Trump demanded, and he received, a special master to review the documents and the Justice Department's right to investigate. That judge, Eileen Cannon, who granted the special master request 3 months ago today, basically said, Never mind what I ruled. What happened?
Well, she was absolutely forced into saying, just kidding, sorry about that. It was one page, and she had to dismiss the case for lack of jurisdiction because the 11th Circuit, as we discussed before, three conservative judges looked at her decision to take part in this case, looked at her decision to say, yes, I can be the one to make decisions about whether or not Donald Trump is entitled to a special master, and said, what on earth are you thinking? You don't have equitable jurisdiction here. If anybody can rule on these questions, it's the magistrate judge who is in charge of this, who's the one who signed off on the search warrant. And for it was, as you said, it was a long time ago. So a small reminder for people, Judge Cannon was not the judge who had anything to do with the search at Mar-a-Lago until the former president and his attorneys filed this suit, basically looking for her. She said, I'm going to take this extraordinary step and exercise something called equitable jurisdiction because of the unique circumstances here. The 11th Circuit, again, two of the three judges appointed by the former president said, no, you can't. You have no place in this case. Hmm. And that's what we saw in that quick dismissal. She just,
that's pretty embarrassing for her, I guess.
One would think that would be pretty embarrassing. Yes.
Okay. But what does this mean in terms of the Department of Justice's investigation? What now?
It means that it moves full steam ahead. It means that they do not have to delay anymore. There were some questions, not just with respect to what the special master was doing, but which documents the Department of Justice could look at, which documents the special master was looking at. Basically, the handcuffs are off at this point. The Department of Justice can look at all of the documents that were seized at Mar-a-Lago as long as the Department of Justice's internal filter team hasn't already filtered out some of those documents. Now, why would you filter out documents? Because they're covered, for instance, by attorney-client privilege or potentially, although I think it doesn't apply, executive privilege, but anything else the Department of Justice is now free to look at and consider as part of its investigation.
Okay, moving on to the January 6th committee, and apparently they're going to release their report around December 21st, and that will include its findings, plus a decision on whether or not there will be some criminal referrals to the Department of Justice. So what are you watching for there? Who could they possibly refer for possible indictment by the DOJ?
Well, it could be the former president of the United States. It could be President Trump. It could be, and I think potentially more likely, some of his attorneys and some of the people who are advising him. Think about John Eastman, for instance. Mm-hmm. Think about Mark Meadows. Think about other people who had even Jeff Clark, part of the Department of Justice, who had a role to play in January 6th. I'm certainly not saying these are the names and that's what's going to happen. But when we think about the people who testified and who, frankly, the Department of Justice are already likely looking at, those are the people we really need to focus on.
What about members of Congress?
So I don't know. When it comes to members of Congress, I don't know that we heard in the hearings, at least, that they had enough involvement to rise to the level of illegal activity. Now, again, the Department of Justice is doing a parallel investigation, which is not public. They don't hold hearings, and that investigation is in private, and we don't know if they're looking at any members of Congress or any of their aides or anyone else. And that's something that we either will find out if there's an indictment or we'll never find out, or we'll find out when somebody writes their book.
Yeah. And this will be put out as a book, as far as I understand, this actual report by the January 6th committee. But the DOJ does not need a referral from them to indict, right? That's a reminder that they can do whatever they want when it comes to indictments.
A really important reminder, the Department of Justice does not have to wait for Congress. And we know that they have asked the House Select Committee for some of its materials. I think they asked for some deposition transcripts, for instance. So they have very likely all of the information that they need to make these assessments. The referral is really a symbolic move. And what it would do is allow the members of the House Select Committee to say, we've investigated this for months. And when it comes to the historical record, we want to go on record as saying this is not just immoral or impermissible, but we think that these sets of behavior rise to the level of federal crimes. And in that way, again, just symbolic.
Right. Okay, let's turn now to same-sex marriage, and the bill that the president is expected to sign this week would protect the rights of same-sex and interracial couples under federal law. And the president, again, he plans to sign it into law, I believe, tomorrow. Of course, the Supreme Court issued its landmark 2015 decision, Obergefell, which legalized same-sex marriage nationwide. Does this bill, which is expected to become law, would that prevent the Supreme Court from overturning Obergefell the way it did Roe?
No, but it would allow for a statutory response, meaning there are statutory protections in place. So overturning Obergefell would say that there isn't protection in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution for same-sex marriage, but that we can leave it, and this should sound similar to the abortion discussion, we can leave it to lawmakers, to democratically elected lawmakers, to create protections. And that would essentially be what we're looking at right now, a federal protection in case the Supreme Court decides to overturn Obergefell and say, you know what, that was an incorrect decision. Then this congressional act would essentially be a safety valve or a backstop.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the bill does not require states to permit same-sex couples to marry, though. Right.
That's right. And it's in that way doesn't go nearly as far as the Obergefell decision. What it really does is it provides some protections on the federal level. It says that if you're married in one state, then another state can't say we're going to fail to recognize that valid marriage. It repeals the Defense of Marriage Act, but it would not resurrect our current set of protections. It would not be a full safety net for people who are now same-sex couples and getting married or already married.
And there's this carve-out for religious organizations, and they do not have to provide any services, facilities, goods, or anything like that in celebration of a marriage. So that would apply to churches, even universities who are religiously affiliated?
I think that's right. This was added as part of an effort to get more Republican votes. And I think the reporting indicates it largely failed to garner much more Republican support after the creation of this carve out. And it would say to certain religious organizations, including universities, that they can, if they satisfy certain requirements, be exempt from the federal law.
All right. Jessica Levinson, our legal eagle here on Press Play. She also teaches law at Loyola Law School. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. It is our season of giving back, and we are asking you to end the year on a bright note by donating to KCRW, by renewing your membership, or by giving us a little extra gift at the end of the year. It's, of course, tax deductible, and there are tons and tons of great reasons to give. One of them, Jennifer Farrow, our president, is the legal eagle herself, Jessica Levinson.
Yes.
Who, when I'm out and about, people, we call them civilians, mm-hmm. tell me how much they love her and they love that segment. They learn so much every week from her because she makes legal issues so easy to understand.
I know. She pulls all this drama in there. It's so interesting. I'm one of those Legal Eagle fans. So thank you, Jessica. Thank you, Madeline. In fact, I have to confess that I've used our app and I listen to your show every day when I am driving home from work. And I love the full
Thank
breadth.
You.
I feel like this show is a microcosm of KCRW. So you're talking about legal issues and things happening internationally. You're going to talk to some, I think, some music DJs later today.
Yeah.
You know, you just got the whole package. It's the whole package. And that's what we're asking you to invest in when you go to kcrw.com/give and make a financial contribution to KCRW.
That's right. And you do that by going online at kcrw.com/give or dialing 800-600-5279. We have some people to thank. Cameron Yee from Camarillo. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Camarillo, right?
Yes.
So Cameron Yee has donated and is a sustaining member. And Cameron picked up the Junebug t-shirt, which is this really cute t-shirt that we have for you, two portly dogs who look pretty hip, cute dogs on that t-shirt. And Michael McNamara from Mission Viejo also donated. And Teresa Salazar, she donated from Pacific Palisades. And Titus Solomon from Tysons, Virginia. about that? Maybe it's Tyson's Corner. Anyway, Tyson's Virginia is what it says here, and he donated as well. And Jennifer, that just points out how many people listen from outside the Los Angeles area. We're not just a Los Angeles station.
That's
or
true.
Service.
Yeah, there's very little like KCRW out in the world that really, I feel like KCRW is the thing that satisfies your curiosity. You're curious about music and food and what's going on in the world and everything like that. And it's all in one package here at KCRW. And what I love about KCRW is that the personalities like you, I mean, I feel like I'm going to call you my friend because we are friends, but you know, in the world, I meet people all the time and they say Madeline Brand is my friend because they listen to you and they feel like you're really talking directly to them. And I think that is a beautiful thing that we get to do because we're here at KCRW. So make that investment. Go to kcrw.com/join, make a financial contribution. Will McClory from San Francisco or McElroy, he gave twice from San Francisco because he just loves Cherry Glazer and MBE so much. So thank you so much. You could give once and, you know, that'd be great. Go to kcrw.com/give.
Or keep giving over and over and over again. That would be really great, too. Whatever you can. And also give for people who can't give. So if you are a little better off than your neighbor and you've had a pretty good year, then think about donating for somebody else. That's just a great way to give back as well. And I think everyone feels good when they're giving back. It's just a wonderful feeling. kcrw.com/give. And we're going to go back to the programming. Coming up, we will preview this week's exciting matches at the World Cup.
Certainly, France is the heavy favorite in this matchup, but no one likes to root for a heavy favorite.
Yes. Rooting for Morocco. That's next on Press Play. This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand.
All eyes now on the referee. It's official. An African breakthrough. Morocco are World Cup semi-finalists.
Morocco made soccer history this weekend, becoming the first African country to make it to the Final Four in the World Cup. They play France on Wednesday. Tomorrow's match, Argentina versus Croatia, rounds out the semifinals. It was a big, big weekend for American football, too. The San Francisco 49ers beat Tom Brady's team with Brock Purdy, the 22-year-old quarterback who was picked last in the draft, and it was a blowout. And also, USC's Caleb Williams took home the Heisman Trophy. We're going to talk about all this now with Will Leach, contributing editor to New York Magazine, where he covers sports. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Okay. Well, before we get to sports news, let's just talk about the death of soccer journalist Grant Wall. I understand that he was a friend of yours. He died suddenly on Friday. He was in Qatar while covering the tournament. He's been on this show. He's been on many, many shows. He was an excellent journalist. And just tell us a little bit more about Grant.
Yeah, you know, Grant was a friend of a lot of people. I was actually pretty fortunate to be one of them. You know, Grant kind of famously, he was actually initially known for writing the first ever cover story for Sports Illustrated about LeBron James. But it turned out he switched off from basketball to cover his true passion, which was soccer. And I think it's really difficult to overstate the profound effect I think he's had on the world of U.S. soccer, both men's and women's. I think that's actually key. He, perhaps more than any other journalist covering soccer, was a huge proponent of women's soccer, and particularly the women's U.S. team. He was both an advocate for the sport, but also, like all great journalists, a great critic of it. You know, one of the many things that one of the last big headlines he made was wearing a rainbow shirt to cover one of the games in Qatar and writing about so much of the corruption going on out there. So I think Grant was kind of everything. He was a really wonderful person and a terrific journalist. And it's to be honest, I think everyone's still pretty much in a lot of shock.
Yeah, because he was only 49. I think he had just celebrated a birthday a few days before.
Yeah, and he had spoken about being a little ill out there before, but he also kind of related that he had covered every men's World Cup since 1994. And one of the great things about Grant is he was always incredibly productive. He said, "I'm tired, but I'm always tired at the World Cup. That's what makes it fun." And I think that speaks to the joy he brought in his job. Sports journalism can grind you down a little bit. There's a lot of travel. You learn how the sausage is made sometimes. That takes some of the fun and joy out of it. And one of the things that made Grant truly great, he really did loved this. He really had a joy for sports. He never let kind of knowing the ugly side of sport take away that joy. And I think that's what the great ones have. And Grant was one of the great ones.
Oh, well, he will be missed. And so our condolences go out to you, to his friends, to his family, his wife, Dr. Celine Gounder, and really the sports community, the sports world. So let's talk about what happened at the World Cup, something he would have been talking about today, and something that we're all excited about to talk about. And that's Morocco playing France, its former colonizer. They're going to play on Wednesday, and this is the first African country to make it to the semifinals. And was this a big upset? They knocked out both Spain and Portugal.
Oh, it was definitely a massive upset. They were 301 odds going into this tournament. I think they're ranked 22nd in the world behind the United States, if that's, you know, how much of a underdog they really kind of truly are. And they have been particularly exciting, not just in their upsets, but the way they've done their upsets. They have a goalie named Bono. Don't worry, he's not putting songs on your iPhone. It is an entirely different Bono. And he's been a terrific keeper for them in a very kind of electric, fun kind of joy. His presence after he made some big saves in their last win, he brought his son onto the field, and it made him a big viral video kind of going around. Morocco has really kind of provided a lot of the joy in this tournament, and you see the celebrations in the Arab world and in the African world across. They are certainly the biggest upset. They're the first African team ever to reach the semifinals. They're certainly still the biggest underdog, but it's stunning that they've been here. And so at this point, why not just keep it going?
Yeah, and they're going to be playing France, which won the last World Cup, and they have the best strikers, one of the best strikers, I should say, maybe the best striker in the world at this point, Mbappe. So I guess the odds are in France's favor, but, you know, you never know.
Yeah, and, you know, France is trying to win its second in a row. That's only happened twice in World Cup history, Italy in 1934 and 1938, and Brazil in 1958 and 1962. And it's fun. You know, France is actually, they're a likable team. Mbappe is particularly likable. He's been a really kind of great presence. And really, this has kind of been his big explosion in this tournament. He's basically been the best player in this tournament. Certainly, France is the heavy favorite in this matchup, but no one likes to root for a heavy favorite.
Right, exactly. We'll all be rooting for Morocco, of course. And what about tomorrow, Argentina and Croatia? Also, a bit of an imbalance there. And so who are you rooting for in that matchup?
Certainly Croatia is a surprise to be here, though perhaps they should not be that much of one, because they, of course, made the World Cup final 4 years ago. And it was an upset for them to get there. They have been known as the cardiac Croatia, though it's worth noting that the alliteration does not work in the Croatian language. That's just something we've kind of made up here in the United States. And it's because they keep winning games in penalty shootouts in the most dramatic way. They won two big ones this year. They really had these, there's nothing really more nerve-shredding in the World Cup than a penalty shootout. And Croatia keeps winning them, and it's really kind of been remarkable. They are going against Argentina. Now, Argentina has also won, like France, has won two World Cups in the past, but it's been since 1986. And I think the biggest storyline for them is they have Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi has been probably the best player in the world for the last decade. He's more low-key, I would argue considerably more likable than, say, a Ronaldo, and so on. Certainly less polarizing than Ronaldo. He is 35 years old. This is probably his final World Cup. Even though Argentina has won before and is the favorite in this, I think it's okay if you want to root for Messi to have that culminating moment, because this would certainly be one.
Okay, very exciting this week to follow the World Cup. Okay, let's talk about American football. Also some exciting news here in Los Angeles with USC's quarterback Caleb Williams winning the Heisman on Saturday. What did you make of his season?
Yeah, it was really, you know, kind of a terrific year. He really showed off. I think people always kind of knew his potential that he's always had. But he's been a perfect fit in the kind of the new regime over kind of running USC. And it's kind of remarkable that Lincoln Riley has been able to turn USC around so quickly. I think it speaks to something pretty exciting to come. Maybe the college football playoff in the first year was maybe a little ambitious, but winning a Heisman is certainly a pretty solid feather to have in your cap.
Okay, on to the NFL. Not the best weekend Tom Brady has ever had. His Tampa Bay Bucks lost 7-35 against the San Francisco 49ers. And their quarterback, Brock Purdy, is the one everyone's talking about. Tell us about him.
Yeah, he is one of the last quarterbacks picked. He's only quarterback because the 49ers have had all of these injuries. And the contrast between him, you know, this rookie quarterback that was drafted so late against, you know, Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time and certainly one of the most polarizing quarterbacks of all time. Mm-hmm. He's also 45, and there are 325-pound 23-year-old men launching themselves at him every single Sunday, and a lot of them were doing so last week. But certainly there have to have been times with everything that's been going on with Brady this year where he had to wonder, okay, I'm 45 years old. Why am I putting myself
He could
myself
be Brock Purdy's father, really.
In all honesty. And the father of many players in the NFL. It's a young man's league, right? To have a quarterback playing at this level is obviously unprecedented. The team isn't that good, but it's not Brady's fault. But I doubt that makes him feel better in the bucket of ice that he's probably been soaking in all day after yesterday's game.
Will Leach, he's a contributing editor for New York Magazine, where he covers sports. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you very much.
Coming up, another thing to look forward to. KCRW DJs will curate a holiday playlist for you. That's coming up next on Press Play. This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. It's been a bit of a stressful year, but there is nothing like some soothing holiday music to make us feel a little better. So we asked some of our DJs here at KCRW which songs get them in the holiday spirit. Take a listen.
Darling, I'm thinking of.
Hey there, my name is Rocio Wildflower Contreras with you, KCRW radio host and DJ. You can call me Ro. Here with you on Press Play with the absolutely fantastic Madeline Brand to share one of my favorite holiday songs, Los Lobos with Christmas and You. I am definitely from team Love Letters and Sweet Songs over Presents. And the lyric that stood out to me was, don't need nothing brand new. All I want are those old times when it was just Christmas and you. What a romantic notion that I completely subscribe to. Quality time and memory making over gifts, now and always.
Don't want no presents from Santa.
Another one of my favorite holiday tunes, Another Lonely Christmas by Prince. It's an ode to all the feelings, to the reality that one can oscillate from feeling lonely and sad to feeling happy and wanting to be around people. And sometimes those lonely feelings happen when we're surrounded by a lot of people, and that's okay. And I'm here to honor all of those emotional waves. Thank you to the Purple One for making the crisp, cool winter season perfectly steamy. I mean, what other Christmas song speaks about skinny dipping in the wintertime? Thank you so much to Prince.
Hey everyone, my name is Jose Galvan, your DJ and music selector here on KCRW Monday nights at 10 p.m. Now, the holidays are upon us, and one of my guilty pleasures is Christmas music and holiday songs. So today, I'm going to share with you guys one of my favorites during this time of the year. It is none other than Bing Crosby's White Christmas. However, in the early 2000s, Cascade remixed and elevated it into a hip breakbeat jam. Ooh, yeah, that's that groove right there. Give him the pocket. Let's take a listen.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten.
That feels so cozy. You know what other song I also love? All I Want for Christmas. Yeah, but not the cover of the ubiquitous Mariah Carey anthem, No Sir. This is an original composition put out for free during the MySpace era by one Karen O, Nick Zinner, and Brian Chase, otherwise known as the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. Very clever using the similar title. I hope you enjoy and have happy holidays.
For you to be near,
Hi, I'm Ann Litt. The song I want to share with you is a Christmas classic that you'll surely know. It's O Come All Ye Faithful. But it is performed in this case by a choir of schoolgirls, and I was actually one of those schoolgirls. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and the school I went to did a Christmas pageant every year. And we would do a giant processional through this very huge church that had stairways and long aisles. And the sort of funny part of the story is by the time we would all get to our places at the end of a million verses of O Come All Ye Faithful, everybody would be completely winded. I'm sure the song sounded terrible by then, but it really signaled for us the beginning of the holiday season, and it was a ritual and a tradition year after year after year. And to this day, when I hear the song O Come All Ye Faithful, it warms up my heart and it makes me smile, and I hope it makes you smile too. There's a Christmas album that also holds a special place for me. Whenever I hear it, it makes me smile, it makes me dance, and it's become a favorite in my family's house now, every time we're decorating the tree or getting ready for the holidays. And it's an album that came out in 1992 called A Very Special Christmas 2. It's volume 2. And the very first song on side A of A Very Special Christmas 2 is Christmas All Over Again from Tom Petty.
Everybody's singing, all the bells are ringing out, and it's Christmas all over again. Yeah, again.
It is just a really fun song, and the thing about this album that's great is it's a whole listen. So the next song on the album is a Randy Travis version of Jingle Bell Rock. And I tell you what, at the breakdown in the song, when you think it's over, and then Randy Travis tells his band to keep on playing.
Hey, that was great. Can we do it one more time, guys?
Here we go. We're rolling.
What a bright time. It's the right.
That moment always elicits a big hoot and howl in my house. And also, Luther Vandross's version of The Christmas Song, another Christmas classic. No better voice than Luther Vandross to sing that. But those are the first three songs on side A of A Very Special Christmas Volume 2. I could literally go through the entire album song for song, but if I hear those three songs back to back, I can tell you what, it's Christmas all over again.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire,
Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide cows being sung by a choir, and folks just up like Eskimos.
Hi, I'm KCRW DJ Nasir Nasirzadeh. And whenever Thanksgiving ends, everyone breaks out their Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. For me, however, another song on that iconic Christmas album holds a special place. It's a song following that one, her arrangement of Oh Holy Night. Because one holy night for me on Christmas Eve, my parents surprised me by giving me a baby Jack Russell Terrier. I couldn't sleep that night, still in shock. I remember listening to that song late at night when I was spending time with my new puppy. I called him Kobe. Religious, so the lyrics don't necessarily make me think of Jesus Christ, but a friend reminded me the other day of the power of that one line, the thrill of hope. I like to feel that that's what Christmas is all about to me. It's that hope and the thrill of it, especially for children, that makes this time of the year so special. Obviously, I hear All I Want for Christmas Is You everywhere, but when I hear the song after it, I'm always reminded of that one holy night in 1996. Another favorite of mine is by my favorite artist of all time, Sufjan Stevens. That Was the Worst Christmas Ever. Despite the title of the song, it's one of my favorite songs of all time, and it just has this amazing campfire feel to it, this timeless feel, like A Christmas Story or some of those other films. Almost like a Vince Guaraldi vibe.
Going outside, shoveling snow in the driveway.
I can't help but think of some of the families that are dysfunctional or maybe not having the most epic Christmas. And it's just, for me, it's comforting to know that there's people that are writing songs for them.
Big thanks to our KCRW DJs, Ro, Wildflower Contreras, Jose Galvan, Ann Litt, and Nasir Nasirzadeh. All right, we have just a few more minutes left of the show. What a great way to end the show on that beautiful music. Joining me now in the studio is Jennifer Farrow, KCRW's president, to ask you to start the week off right and become a member in the final few weeks of the year at kcrw.com/give.
Yeah, this is the time when we think about all those other people that we love, the places that we care about, the investments we want to make in our own community, looking closer to home. Think about KCRW. We are part of that for you, I'm sure. You're listening right now, so we must have some value to you, and we're going to ask you to support KCRW by going to kcrw.com/give. And if you do decide to take as your gift giving meals to the food bank, we will double those meals. So right now, it's a really big time to make an impact with the gift you're making. So be a supporter. Be like Catherine Borsenek from Telluride, Colorado, gave a generous gift to KCRW. Mary Weingarten, Allison Saviano. If they had given gifts to the LA Regional Food Bank, for instance, we would be doubling them. So it's a great way to make a big impact. Do it now. Go to kcrw.com/give.
Yes, it is the season of giving back. And this is just a great way to just feel really good about maybe, you know, you're at the end of the year and you're like, oh, I have to buy all these presents. And you don't feel so great about all the consumption that you feel obligated to do. This is a great way to kind of offset that. It's like buying a carbon offset in a way. You're actually doing something positive and good and contributing and not just consuming by becoming a member of KCRW. Because if you do give to the food bank, you're giving to two worthy organizations. Or how about giving someone a membership for the holidays, for Hanukkah or for Christmas? You could do that too. So do that online at kcrw.com/give. We also have a whole bunch of great thank you gifts. So imagine that you, I don't know, you give someone a gift and then you print out a copy of a photo of the t-shirt or the cap or the socks or whatever you want to get. And you say, you're going to get some of this great merch because now you're a member of KCRW. That's such a great present.
And I know.
Maybe it's a great stocking stuffer.
Yeah, what about that bucket hat, Madeline? We got to get people in the KCRW bucket hat.
People love that hat.
It is really
stylish.
When
we had it in the last drive,
yeah.
People really went for that. It's really great. But the whole thing is about giving and giving back and being part of the community. And that's what we do here. This is a nonprofit radio station. Not a lot of us are making a ton of money because it's public radio, but we're doing it because we believe in the mission. And we know you do too. At kcrw.com/give. Just a few seconds left, Jennifer.
I know. Come on. We would love to scoop you up and have you as a supporter of KCRW. Go to kcrw.com/give. Do it now. We need you.
Yes, we need you now more than ever. End the year off right. Start the week off right. Become a member. Renew your membership. Give a little extra, whatever it is. But just go online right now and do it. kcrw.com/give. Jennifer Farrow, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for joining me every day listening to Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand, and I'll see you tomorrow.